substance equals spurn. The propaganda's a win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to 1 in 200, the Media and Politics podcast here in Aotearoa. I'm joined by my co-host, Philip. How you doing, Philip?
Kia ora, you're dropping the A word today. That's a new development from a Kyle intro. I like it.
It's important when we're needing to distinguish between ourselves and other members of the Commonwealth. And we're also joined by a special guest, Paris Marks. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm down here in your nice little country. So things are good.
Fantastic. And we're here to talk today about the upcoming Canadian elections. It's been a pretty wild ride following even just the polling. So I think last time you were on the podcast with us, Paris, it was to talk about what's happening in Canada and just do a quick update and preparation then for an election this year. And Trudeau was still in charge. He was on the way out. That seemed to be pretty clear. We had some thoughts about how he might be able to retain power. Didn't do it, decided to step down. Had a runoff among a number of leadership contenders with Mark Carney taking over the party. And almost immediately as he started doing his kind of party leadership honeymoon phase, Trump went on this just wild set of attacks against Canada, which, you know, it's not often that the centre-left party gets to do the big strongman act. And Carney did it and it worked. And now things are looking really bad for Conservatives after they'd been leading for two years in the polling.
Yeah, basically. For the past like year and a half to 2 years, it basically looked guaranteed that the Conservatives would be forming a government after the next election. The question was just like, will it be a minority government? Will it be a majority government? It's probably going to be a majority government. And what is that going to mean for us? And then in the past few months, like everything has been flipped on its head. Part of that is because Justin Trudeau left and he was kind of, you know, where a lot of anger was directed for just, you know, the state of things, cost of living, you know, various issues that people have in the country. It wasn't really directed at the Liberals specifically. It was like Justin Trudeau personally. So when he stepped aside, you know, it created an opening for something else, right? For a kind of renewal. And even as that happened, people were pointing to Kamala Harris, right? And what happened in the States and saying, look, people thought, you know, everything was going to work out fine in the States. You know, Joe Biden stepped aside, Kamala Harris, you know, came in. You know, people thought that meant that they were actually going to have a chance at winning the election. And then they completely like blew it. And, you know, now Trump is tearing America and the world apart. But in Canada, it seems to be working, at least so far. You know, we're speaking now, I believe there's about 3 weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks exactly left to the election. And, you know, right now the Liberals are, the way that they're polling, they're probably going to win a majority government, which is hard to believe given the Liberals have been in power for 9 years in Canada already, right? The Conservatives, they're still polling pretty well. Like the Liberals now are polling kind of in the low 40s. The Conservatives are still in like kind of the mid to high 30s range. And if it was any other time, we would say, okay, the Conservatives are a shoe-in to form government if they're polling at this level. But the reason why that is not the case this time is because support has completely collapsed for the smaller parties. So the New Democratic Party, which is, you know, traditionally more of a center-left kind of a party, more to the left of the Liberals, you know, has that relationship with organized labor. They're polling at like 5, 6, 7%, which is just historically low. And they could potentially not even have official party status in the next parliament, which is just wild to think about. The Bloc Québécois, which is the Quebec separatist party, they're polling incredibly low as even French speakers in Quebec get behind the Liberals. The Green Party is, you know, basically non-existent. They're probably going to lose their one or two seats that they have right now. And we also have a party called the People's Party, which, you know, no one really talks about, which is kind of like more of a far-rightish kind of party. But you know, they're not even really in the discussion this election. But yeah, so things are completely changed. And in large part, that is because of the Donald Trump effect.
Yeah, it seems, I just saw some polling in the last couple of days, and the Liberals have opened up a double-digit lead over the Conservatives now, which is double what it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think, you know, just harking back to that strategy of letting the old leader go, the leader that took a country through COVID. You had it happen with Harris and Biden. You also had it happen here in Aotearoa. Hipkins stepped in for Ardern. And I think one of the clearer differentiations between what Carney and then Harris and then Hipkins have done moving into an election is that there is a clear delineation between Carney and what was happening under Trudeau. And he's got this huge external pressure, like outside him, giving him the opportunity, right? But it wasn't a given that he needed that in order to shift the way that voters viewed the party.
It's very beneficial for him because he was not a Liberal MP, right? He doesn't have a seat in Parliament. He is basically, this is his first time running for elected office. Even though, yeah, sure, he did some advising to the federal Liberals in Canada, you can't easily tie him to the Liberal Party as it was under Justin Trudeau. And he has also been quick to, try to show that he will be a different kind of a leader. And actually that has been somewhat surprising too, right? Because a lot of the narrative for the past, I don't know, couple of years, I guess, is that Justin Trudeau spent too much money, he took the party too far to the left, that turned people off, and now the Liberals need to come back to the center, where they can kind of, got basically win and blah blah blah, right? And so Carney in his campaign to be leader basically said he would be that guy, right? One of his slogans was spend less, invest more, whatever that is supposed to mean.
Sorry, that is embarrassing. I
It's
had not
totally
seen that. That's
stupid. Yeah.
wonderful.
Great central banker stuff there because Mark Carney, of course, was head of the Bank of Canada during the 2008 financial crisis and then head of the Bank of England during Brexit and, all that kind of stuff, right? So that is how he kind of positioned himself. And so people were like, okay, this is a guy who's going to come in. He's going to be cutting spending. This is like at least austerity light that is going to be happening here. We don't have like a costed platform from him yet that will come closer to election day. But actually, I would say so far, the kinds of things he has announced have been surprisingly decent, right? Like, obviously, he is talking about wanting to make government more efficient and all that kind of stuff, which sounds a bit weird in an age of Doge, but is not completely unreasonable, I would say. But he has already extended coverage for dental care to low-income people between the ages of 18 and 64.
So he's doing this before the election. He's not kind of
That's
hanging
right.
it out as an election bribe. He's just
No,
like, we're just going to get it
before.
done.
Yeah, before the election was even called, he was like, we are going to extend this because we already have however many people who have coverage under this. It's made a big difference to their lives. This will cover so many million more people. And we know that this is the right thing to do. He's continued to support the public daycare program that Justin Trudeau rolled out, that his government rolled out and was recently in the process of kind of expanding, putting more money into so more public daycare places can be created over the coming years to kind of solidify that program, make sure it's not going anywhere, make sure it's robust into the future. He's also announced plans to have the government be building a lot more housing. We'll see what that turns out, to be in practice. It will be some kind of a public-private partnership sort of a thing. We know that, but all the details aren't out there. He's also announced significant increases to funding for the CBC, the public broadcaster in
That's
Canada.
interesting.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like things that he is saying and suggesting that sound pretty good for a guy who has positioned himself as like more centrist to try to win over more right-wing voters. And I would say part of that is that he has really benefited from a kind of rally around the flag effect where people in Canada do feel threatened by what's happening in the United States, and he has really successfully presented himself as the person who can not just bring Canadians together, but also to really develop a program to kind of push back against the United States, to not kind of cower and give in to the pressure coming from Donald Trump. But also he's already showing that he's trying to expand Canada's relationships with other parts of the world, change the way that Canadian, economic policy, military policy, foreign policy, not always in the greatest of ways, but is going to change in a way that I think a lot of Canadians are responding to positively. So yeah, it's been really surprising to see the shifts there.
Yeah, and I guess just to draw that line between other Western politicians that kind of fit in the same strata, right? Harris took over and started with a bang, and then very quickly was pulled in line with the previous Biden administrative decisions. Started talking about, continuing fracking, trying to look for these really niche 2 to 5% electoral decisions that could help swing a single state, as opposed to looking at big, interesting stuff that would get more people on board, would turn people out to vote. And during this period, she was essentially the president in a lot of ways. Things could have happened coming up to the election, similar to what Carney has done, where they could have just bribed people, essentially. I think the most stunning thing to me is that Carney has decided to actually implement this stuff. It's not just suggestions. It is, this is what I think we need to do. This is the direction I think we need to go in light of what the United States is doing. And look, I can also get it done. I'm also a doer, because so often, and especially in the current age of Western politics, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of bright lights. But then when push comes to shove, you get a lot of centre-left politicians. Look at Starmer in the UK, for example, who just fold like something that folds really easily, and go full-on austerity, like just do the most horrific cuts to social services. Same here in New Zealand. Hipkins had 2 or 3 months before the election, where he could have really done some really positive implementation that would have made people's lives better under a cost of living crisis, which was the entirety of the opposition party's election campaign. He could have gone, oh, they're right, it is really tough out here. I'm currently the prime minister with an absolute majority. I can do anything I want. Here's $5,000 each. Like, obviously hyperbole. Instead it was, oh, we're actually going to cut all these different programs because it's not the time to make that decision now. And we're going to push some of this other stuff out. But if you'd like it, you should vote for us.
It's an interesting contrast. Absolutely. I just wanted to jump on the end there quickly to say, like, the Chris Hipkins comparison, I think, is really instructive. And, like, I'd be interested in your opinion, Paris, because you've got a little bit of, like, New Zealand politics experience as well. And the way that Chris Hipkins has always been perceived is definitely to the right of Jacinda, but he's a political animal, right? Like, he's the furthest thing possible from a fresh broom. Like, this is not his first rodeo. He's been doing this since he was, what, 8 years old, probably, right? He's a little politics freak, and it's not endearing for him to come in as, ex minister of health, ex minister for COVID response, ex minister for police, and be like, no, I'm the new guy to change the perception of this government that suddenly turned ill at the end of the last Labour government, to be clear. And then, yeah, hang on a policy bonfire platform, essentially to, like, destroy rather than create. And there was pretty much nothing new that he brought to the table. There was the, GST of whatever, trash, 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 fresh food, which immediately becomes its own quagmire without getting into policy details. That's why I thought it was interesting that, like, you can immediately name some things that Mark Carney has actually done in his time in power, which has been similarly short, right? That's why I think it's an interesting comparison. It's not like he walked in and, I mean, in New Zealand media, anyone who came in with that level of quote unquote mandate would be absolutely derided by the media. Like, Chris Hipkins already was, called, like, not a real prime minister by our big kind of establishment media, which, I don't know, is there a similar kind of perspective? I'm interested in what's the who do you talk to on the whatever the Clapham omnibus of Canadian society is? Like, what's the view of the human on the street?
Yeah, I feel like that was not a big of an issue as big of an issue in Canada, because it was kind of like already kind of how would I put it? They were already suggesting that an election was coming, like, if he won, right? He was only prime minister for like 9 or 10 days before they called the election, so there wasn't a whole lot of time there. It was like he took a quick trip to Europe to meet with the presidents of, well, the president of France and the prime minister of the UK and the king, of course, to, kind of demonstrate, like, see, we do have allies, outside of the United States. We have other options, people who we can work with. They started suggesting that the F-35 contract was going to get reviewed and likely canceled. So we would be buying military hardware from, places that are not the United States, effectively, and in particular, places that were willing to allow the hardware to be built in Canada to transfer, probably the intellectual property associated with it. That's what the Swedes, for example, Saab has proposed to do with Canada. And then, of course, the dental care stuff and things like that, right? I do think it's interesting, like in the New Zealand case, that on the one hand, like, Hipkins was chosen, and obviously we see how, he didn't really want to like piss anyone off, or it really seemed like he was trying not to make any like business interests particularly angry in a way that would like maybe come back and hurt the campaign. I was a bit surprised though to see that he even stayed on like after that campaign. I would imagine like, potentially you would want like a reinvention to gear up for the next election. And I know that, like you were saying, he's a political animal, and they've been talking about changing tax policy and all those sorts of things ahead of the next election, their proposals for tax policy, obviously. But like what that ultimately looks like, and whether he can be like the right person to sell that, I think is, you guys would know more than me, but it, I think is very, I'm very skeptical of it, right? I think the one other thing I would say about Carney, maybe just to nuance it a little bit, is, there is still some of that more right-wing stuff that is in there that is a bit concerning, but I feel like it's tempered to such a degree that it's like, okay, we know that, things are going to change. We know that, not everything is going to be perfect, but if the choice is between, Mark Carney as Liberal leader being prime minister, or Pierre Poilievre as Conservative leader being prime minister, Mark Carney is obviously more favorable in kind of any situation, but especially a situation when we're facing this degree of hostility from the United States. And Pierre Poilievre, and kind of the way he's taken the Conservative Party, is much more aligned to kind of, Trumpian Republican politics than we've traditionally seen in Canada from that party, right? And even with everything that's happening now, he doesn't seem to be able to really like let that go. And that's part of the reason why people don't really trust putting him in power at this moment. And luckily, maybe that's one good thing that Trump has done, is to make sure that the Conservatives are not going to form the next election. There was actually a funny story a couple weeks ago where, or I guess it was a week ago or so now, I don't know, whatever, that the Premier of Alberta, who is like probably the most right-wing premier in Canada right now, was doing an interview with Breitbart, a right-wing news organization in the United States, if people aren't aware. And she was basically quoted as saying, like, I've asked the Trump administration to like lay off on the tariffs just for a little while because it's hurting the Conservatives in the election, and we want to make sure that they win. And like everyone jumped on those comments. It was like, how can you be so stupid to like say that out loud to media?
Incredible.
It's just wild. But sorry, one more point, and then, but basically on Carney, like, he, is obviously doing this stuff that sounds really good. But at the same time, he's still proposing to like build more oil pipelines. He's ditched the carbon tax in Canada, which, I don't necessarily have, a big problem with, but it's unclear what, his actual climate policy is going to be so far. So that is still a worrying part of it. But I would say one of the things that sounds like, more hopeful, or something that I think resonates, is, since kind of, I guess, the 90s or the 80s, it's felt like you can't really do very much in Canada, right? The notion of like making big public investments, trying to have the ambition to build major infrastructure projects, just feels like it's completely off the table, right? Because everything needs to be left to the market, and if the government is spending money, that's like inherently a bad thing. But one of the things that he has talked about explicitly is that, especially in the face of what's happening with the United States, we need to be thinking about what nation-building projects look like, what it means to kind of continue to kind of really shore up Canada, to continue to build Canada and its capacities. He's supporting a high-speed rail project between Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, and Quebec City, which are, almost like half of Canada lives in this like southern Ontario to southern Quebec corridor. I think that there's opportunity there that, if people can be organized once he takes power, that there's potential to get some good things out of that, even recognizing that it's still a Liberal government. There's probably still going to be some shitty stuff that they end up doing, but it's far better than what the alternative would have been.
But when you say supporting something like that, do you mean in quote unquote investing, as he would say, I imagine, in like an ongoing public-private private partnership with like several foreign companies who will come in and take all the profits off the top, blah blah blah, right? I assume that's what you'd get from a liberal government. We're not going to get like a actual, nation growth agenda paid for and built and controlled by anything, let alone by the state, right?
Yeah, sadly, that would be my guess. And the high speed rail project that is being proposed right now is basically a public private partnership as well. They're kind of bringing in like the French high speed rail or the French rail company to build it, which is probably necessary. I don't think we have that capacity really in Canada. And when he hit the home kind of building program that he's talked about is very clearly, some kind of a public private partnership. Like, this is a guy who was a central banker. He worked at Goldman Sachs. He worked at some investment firm before this. Like, this is kind of his, this is his area. And I think I would say that I would prefer a high speed rail line that is fully public, that is owned and run and controlled by a public company. But at this point, if this is what we got to do to get a high-speed rail line that should have been built decades ago, then I'll say, okay, let's fight to make sure it's like as as least bad as it can be. But if a public-private partnership is the pathway to get it done, then all right, let's go for it, unfortunately.
And you can nationalize it later, right?
Totally, yeah.
The really interesting thing, and I think like just for our New Zealand audience, like I'd say there are a lot of lessons here for the direction of the centre left and the West, because there are really clear comparisons between the really drastic failure in the United States and what's happening in Canada now, and the I would say almost worse collapse in the UK of their centre-left party, UK Labour, under Keir Starmer, which is probably going to do end up in a similar situation to Trump in the US, but with a new, more fascist party than the Republicans under Reform on the current and the current direction. And I think, like with this rise in kind of far right rhetoric and policy and coordination, it's just really useful to be clear-eyed about that. I think one of the things you mentioned around the Conservative Party, they'd been kind of trying to do this Trumpian thing, and draw these parallels between the cultural hegemony in the United States and what's happening at home in Canada, and that's really alongside the punishment being doled out to Trudeau over COVID and over the cost of living stuff, what had been taking them to such clear polling heights that they were going to, like, they're a shoo-in for this coming election until recently. And this Trump shift has just led to a complete disjunction, what they've been able to sell to the public, because you've had Pierre Poilievre like standing up and trying to do the same thing as Mark Carney is, saying like, no, Trump's wrong, like we need to stand for Canada, and trying to do the nationalism thing. But voters aren't that stupid. They can see what he's been doing for the last 4 or 5 years. I think it's he's been in charge for about 4 or 5 years, right?
That's right. He actually, if I remember correctly, he basically took over the party around the same time that the trucker convoy was
Yeah, that's right. That's
in
really clearly
Ottawa. And
coordinated far right movement, right? That had
absolutely.
like was
And he
had
was kind of
direct links to the
supporting
states.
it. Yeah, he was kind of supporting that. Has had ties with those kind of far right groups. Has echoed a lot of conspiracy theories over the past number of years. Obviously has very little compulsion with kind of lying and misrepresenting the facts in order to present things the way that he wants them presented or that looks good for him politically. One of the things that has really stood out as well is that he's very hostile toward the media. And so, like, conservative MPs won't go on CBC, the public broadcaster, for example. They just will not appear because, of course, one of the pledges of the Conservative Party is to defund the CBC.
That's incredible that in the environment, Carney has decided to just give them more money,
Yeah.
because that's exactly the kind of thing that Labour has failed on in New Zealand again and
Right.
again. They're just like, oh, yeah, we don't know what to do about the media either. We're not going to fund more. We're going to maybe reassess this funding. And meanwhile, like every time the National Party is like, we're going to put all these National Party MPs on the board. We're going to cut this funding here, here, and here. And it's happening again now. And you have like ACT and New Zealand First always being completely hostile to the media, like no holds barred, insane stuff sometimes. And Labour's response to that has been often to try and sit on the fence about it. No, your allies are a functioning media system. Just give them $1 billion.
That's in the 2017 election, Labor had like an actual program that at least, I mean, had is a strong word, campaigned on an actual program to support RNZ and increase its functions like pretty impressively, and then immediately botched it and didn't give a shit and squirreled it away and hid it in a small box in the attic and then never
Well, they were
spoke
going to
about it again.
merge TVNZ and RNZ, right?
I mean, yeah, but merged became a watchword for whatever you want it to be, right? So, but anyway, back to Canada. How has that functioned? Like, I'm interested in the Poilievre discussion because, like, to what extent do you think that was self-inflicted based on a perception of like the Trump clone effect? And then, like, what do people expect? Like, what do they think nationalists are, right? Like, if someone was an actual Canadian nationalist and they were like Canada first, then like how would that differ from what Pierre Poilievre is for our New Zealand audience, including me, who like wouldn't know the distinction between those two things aesthetically or like in the way that you present yourself, right? How do you win that kind of cultural battle, I guess?
Well, one of his slogans is literally Canada first. And then recently he added a few extra words and it was Canada first for a change. Like we need someone who's
That's
finally
such a
gonna put
sad sack.
I know it's terrible.
For our New Zealand listeners, that's three of Winston Peters's campaigns rolled into one.
But yeah, so he has been embracing a lot of this kind of Trumpian stuff for a while. He in recent years has called for the head of the Bank of Canada to be fired because he is making everything more expensive for people or whatever. He just picks up on really random policies. So he's promoted a lot of crypto and Bitcoin stuff. Like any weird kind of conspiracy linked kind of thing. He's kind of gone after Davos and the World Economic Forum. All this kind of weird, like online right-wing weirdo stuff is like what he has kind of championed as his message to the wider public. Part of the reason it worked for him to like get support for a while was that on the one hand, people were obviously frustrated. Cost of living was increasing. There was already this kind of people were fed up with Justin Trudeau. I think it's fair to say, right? And so he was able to seize on that and say, we're going to change things. We're going to make things better. We're going to be good for workers. We're going to build houses. All this kind of crap that I don't really believe, but he would say it, right? And he didn't really have to put meat on the bones of the policy. And because he avoided the media, he never really had to answer many questions about what he was actually proposing, right? And even when he did have interactions with media, they didn't tend to push him very hard to actually put some meat on the bones of the policies. And so now when we come around to, on the one hand, the return of Trump to power, and in particular what he has been doing, that has meant that, even some people who were maybe more open to the kind of more Trumpian shtick he was doing are not so open to it anymore for the most part. The other piece of it is, I would imagine a lot of people were kind of just parking their votes with the conservatives because they were fed up with the liberals and Justin Trudeau. And as Justin Trudeau was kind of, cycled out and Mark Carney cycled in, and Mark Carney is able to present himself as like, look, I was a banker, I'm a really kind of competent technocrat. That kind of appeals to some of those folks, and so they can come back in. And then the final piece of that is, of course, the threats that are being levied at Canada, the fact that over the next 4 years, a lot of important decisions are going to have to be made that are going to shape Canada for decades to come. And I think it's pretty clear that a lot of Canadians are really not comfortable with him being the person who would be making those decisions. And that's why, yes, we have seen conservative support drop, though not as much as I would like it to drop. But, the real, I think, story of the election is that decimation of these other center-left parties, the New Democrats, the Bloc Québécois, and the Green Party, and so many of their voters rallying behind the Liberals because they see very clearly that, like, sure, the Liberals aren't perfect, but there's no chance that Pierre Poilievre can be allowed to form government in this moment. And so you're seeing, this real kind of strategic voting, whatever you want to call it, people being like, even if I don't love the Liberals, even if I don't love Mark Carney, I'm willing to hold my nose and vote for him. And in some cases, people just saying, I'm behind this guy. Like I'm liking what he's saying, you know.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing with Canada as well, right? Is that your smaller parties all tend to either trend left or be separatist,
Yeah,
I guess,
and
which
even
is
the
different
Separatist
than
Party
a lot of other
is
places.
it totally. Even the Separatist Party is more left leaning, right? The only kind of distinction there is they're more racist because they're in Quebec and you know they pull from that kind of French tradition of being
Of
racist.
racism.
Yeah, exactly.
Respectable pro-racism tradition.
Yeah. Well,
But
you know,
yeah.
like the anti
Yeah, we know what you mean. We know what you mean.
Picasso, all that kind of shit, you
But it's
know,
fine, it's fine.
around Lacité and but the thing I would just say on that is there were smaller conservative parties in the past. You know, back in the 90s, there were three conservative parties, the Progressive Conservative Reform and Canadian Alliance. But basically in the early 2000s, they all merged up, or maybe it was the late 90s, something like that. They merged back up into what is now the Conservative Party, and they have not split since. I would be interested though to see if Poilievre does lose, you know, as he is poised to do, and this will be like the fourth election in a row that the conservatives have now lost, and they've tried very different kinds of leaders and all that kind of stuff. I would be interested to see if one of the kind of post-election effects is potentially the kind of fracturing of that coalition that created the current version of the Conservative Party into the more like extreme faction that is represented by Pierre Poilievre and also a lot of kind of the conservative parties in the West, so in British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and then you know more of the old Progressive Conservative Party as it was called, which is more of an East Coast sort of a thing and not as extreme, which you know currently, if anyone's paid attention to Canadian politics, is kind of represented by Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, who has kind of presented himself as Captain Canada, who works really well with the federal liberals, has been like wearing hats like Donald Trump has, but his is Canada is not for sale. Like he is this populist kind of figure, but in a very different mold from a Pierre Poilievre. And there was this story a few weeks ago that as the election was about to be called, Pierre Poilievre called up Doug Ford and was like, and there was recently an election in Ontario. And like, so this is weeks after the election was finished, finally called him up and was like, hey, congratulations on winning your new majority government there in Ontario. Like, can you guys help us in the federal election that's coming? And Doug Ford was basically like, nah, I'm too busy governing Ontario. I'm not supporting you.
So good. But this is the thing, like so many of these right-wing apparatus are so defunct now. It's this little in-house fucking machine that does it actively pushes people away and cuts people off. So it's nice to see a situation where that's actually being punished. I mean, you're seeing it happening in the States right now, right? The only way they're able to get this stuff done is brutally use the powers of state. And they're keeping a really tight core of what 19 to 25-year-olds are just running around, destroying the public service because they can't get any of these other people like working with them effectively. I think even DeSantis is at times at odds with the Trump White House, right? Like, and DeSantis is a piece of shit. Like, he's a really evil guy, but this is how they operate. They're always gonna self-destruct and destroy each other and lash out. We're seeing that happen constantly in the Trump White House, and there is still a strand of conservatism which has more administrative discipline, I guess you'd call it. It's certainly not something that you're generally seeing in New Zealand as much, but that's because we've got a different model of Overton window, right? Like where the far right parties are used to lead the major party rather than fight with them. But you can only imagine that will, or you can imagine that will only last for so long. And I guess the other side of that is, Canada's a real country and we're kind of not down here.
Well, if you ask some Canadian leftists, they will disagree with you. yeah. You know, Canada is, you know, a settler country, is a colonial entity, right?
By that I mean just like you have people who are doing
Yeah.
they have a lot of population and they're having to have really specific and serious administrative skill.
Totally.
They have to network in order to function even as a settler colonial state, right?
Yeah. Well, like 40 million is different from 5 million. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
just a
take your
little.
point.
No, but I mean, look, we're pretty spread out for a country. Our country also sucks a lot. We're also very spread out.
Are
Like,
you
it's
saying New
places.
Zealanders are spread out and Canadians are not?
No, I'm not saying Canadians are not. I'm saying this is the connection, right?
Oh,
This is why you're our friends to the north. Like, it's
yeah.
the same. It's the same curse
Oh,
with,
we're spread out from one another. Okay.
right?
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
No, exactly. And it
Well,
just,
I sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, this is the similarity, right? Like, we're next to a belligerent neighbor with like famously racist tendencies when we keep our racism like slightly more subsumed and like behind a cup of tea or whatever. But I mean, it's essentially the same program, you know? And like, I was just looking at a graph over time of like polling. Have you guys heard of MMP? Because it might
We have
solve
actually.
some of your polling issues.
We have been having a discussion about MMP for at least 3 decades, maybe five. Yeah. And there have been moments where it's looked like we've been really close to adopting it, and then the Liberals and the Conservatives make sure that doesn't happen.
No, because look, like I'm just looking at this like trajectory over the last period, and it looks like, because look, I remember we had this conversation, I think maybe after the last Canadian election, where you were saying like the NDP, the New Democratic Party, that's the more traditionally kind of centre left party as opposed to the kind of centrist party, had bought into this deal that was potentially quite toxic and would end up wearing the diseases of their friends, the Liberals, and like against. Probably, I agree. In New Zealand, we've had that pattern over and over again until pretty recently. That's been the pattern, but it looks like, I don't know. And since 2021, they've been doing pretty well. They've kind of stuck around 20% polling wise, right? Until only pretty recently, and then
Yeah.
tanked brutally.
Well, and basically what was happening there was, as people were pissed off with the Liberals, you had some of those folks go to the Conservatives and some of them go to the New Democrats and kind of park their votes on both sides. And now, since Justin Trudeau has left, since you have a new leader, since you have this kind of national existential crisis, that has completely, eaten into the New Democrats and their kind of vote and support.
How is that? It's actually probably a useful thing just to like chip into a little bit, but how was the NDP not more prepared to respond to that? The Jagmeet Singh's still the leader, right?
Yep, that's
He's
right.
been around for a little while.
I believe this is his
Long time.
third election.
Yeah, you'd expected at least a little bit more political nous about how to position oneself and how to have like started eating the Liberals' lunch a little bit more prior to this happening. I mean, did they get up over mid-20s, the NDP for a little bit there?
I would assume so, yeah.
And just gone like that. Like what has gone wrong for the minor party of the left, the NDP in Canada?
Well, I think part of it is that it's kind of abandoned that notion of being a left party to a certain degree, right? So I would say this. I think that they have some real wins from the past few years from having this agreement with the Liberals. They ensured that a really kind of watered down version of a pharmacare plan started to be implemented. It still needs to be massively expanded. They can claim responsibility for the dental care program, that ultimately rolled out and has now been expanded. Again, I don't love the way it was rolled out. I don't love the way it's structured, but at least it's something. They pushed for positive changes to kind of electoral rules and things like that that people don't, pay as much attention to because they're not so visible. A lot of those kind of social policy developments over the past number of years came thanks to that support. Also, a bill kind of banning scab workers when workers go on strike and things like that. So they achieved some wins for the unions as well, which is really good to see.
Did the electorate see those as NDP wins, though, or were they just chalked up as Liberal wins because Liberals were in government?
Exactly. They see them as liberal things that the Liberals did. Even though, I think that they can make a fair argument that not all that stuff would have gotten done if the New Democrats weren't there kind of holding their votes as ransom, in order to keep the parliament going and to make sure that the Liberals that were polling incredibly terribly, were able to avoid going to an election and kind of getting wiped out. But I would say the other piece of that is that the New Democrats, their communications have been absolutely dog shit. Like, they cannot communicate to save their lives. And I think Jagmeet Singh should have gone after the last election to allow some sort of renewal. I think the difficulty there was that once they formed this agreement with the Liberals, they couldn't easily kind of, eject their leader after that happened because you needed someone to kind of keep that relationship together, right? Maybe they should have gotten rid of him like a year ago and gotten a new leader. But unfortunately, they haven't done that. He's definitely out after this election. But like his, when you look back at his tenure as leader of the NDP, you are going to see these wins from this deal that they had with the Liberals. But you're also going to see this decline of the NDP significantly, kind of election after election after election, where this big wave of support that the New Democrats had back in the mid 2010s has been totally wiped out. And now we might see not just a new Democratic Party that is not going to have official party status, which is 12 seats in Parliament. Like they might only have 5 or 6 seats after this, which is wild to think if current polling is accurate. Singh himself might not even win his seat on current polling. So, like, this party is going to get wiped out. And that offers opportunity for renewal, but it also makes you wonder who wants to take on a party that has been so decimated, and you probably have 4 years of a liberal majority government before you can even have a crack at trying to win any of that back. We'll see, right?
Philip, are you able to give because I remember we had a conversation with someone from the Scottish Greens previously as well. I'm just making the same argument. And we've done reporting around Greens confidence in supply or Greens with seats outside cabinet, ministerial roles outside cabinet, right? About these same things happening. It was such a huge win for the Green Party and James Shaw in particular, given how much he talked about it, to be a minor party in government that didn't get kicked out in the next election.
And
It's as well tr like known like function of trying to work with a major party in Western democracies that the minor party gets crushed.
I mean, it has been in the past, but like now maybe the trajectory has changed. Who knows? Like that was record breaking at the time that in New Zealand the Green Party not only wasn't crushed, but in fact increased its percentage, if not massively, its success, right? So I mean, look, it depends what your metrics of success are. Some of us who say like your effect on your society might mean quite a lot, might be a little disappointed by that. But if you think like numbers on a spreadsheet are good and percentage go up is a win, then that's all you want. But yeah, that's why I was curious to hear about the like the NDP perspective, I think. And especially
I feel like in terms of policy, this election, like it just feels like they're grasping at straws. Like it's like they don't really know what to present to people or what to argue. Like they just seem lost. They really do.
well, this would have been the secondary effect of Carney taking some of the things the NDP had helped create, like the dental
Yeah.
and the childcare, and going, I'm doing it right now, it's mine, right?
Exactly. But also to
But
be
it's also they're kind of timid, right? Like it's a
okay.
party that had socialist roots that has over time continually watered that down, taken the word socialist out of the party constitution, like, even talking about public telecom and because a big issue in Canada is the cost of like cell phone bills and internet and things like that, right? Which a lot of people perceive, and I would say correctly, are too expensive because we have a few major telecom, like
Sounds
basically a
very
telecom
familiar
oligopoly.
somehow.
Exactly. It's quite similar,
I mean,
right?
that should be the Labour Party of Canada, right? It's just that,
Yeah.
like, it's been bastardized downwards and downwards, and similarly, like, the Liberal Party is kind of the natural party of government. So, like, it is, I think, confusing to New Zealanders because our political structure is so different, both kind of structurally and, like Kyle was saying, in terms of Overton window per party, we do have a very different set of expectations, but I
Well,
think that.
I typically say this, right? Like, if you're familiar with British politics, then after the Second World War, you had the reversal of the Liberals and the Labour Party, right? In terms of who was going to be like the second major party alongside the Conservatives. In Canada, that flip never happened, and so we still have the Conservatives as and the Liberals as the two major ones. New Democrats occasionally form government on the provincial level, but have never done so on the federal level.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, and I think like that historical development that has come only pretty recently, both in New Zealand and who knows, maybe like I think the potential was there in Canada. I don't know if that's a good development, To be clear, like, I think the maintenance of polling isn't necessarily a sign of success. Like, it's a sign of maintaining a base, but is that the base you needed to achieve your objectives? I don't think that's yet proven. And like, the Scottish Greens would say no from the conversations we've had, right? And Austrian Greens, obviously, massive shift. The left in Germany is like well publicized. Ireland was just absolutely destroyed. It's fascinating, I think, the history of like minority leftist parties introduced as a partner with a larger, more centre-left partner into like a governing arrangement. And like, I think the trajectory of that needs to be studied really carefully for the electoral left. And like, this is whatever happens, I think it's going to be an interesting lesson, like both watching what the NDP ends up with, and obviously like Bloc Québécois is its own kind of kettle of fish, and then like the Greens, as you say, probably going to be even less relevant than they were before.
Well, they're going to be irrelevant, which is again, that's like this is one of the going to be the interesting kind of post-election stories, right? Like if it plays out how it's playing out right now, you're going to have a liberal majority government is what it currently looks like. Again, recognizing that there's 3 weeks left, that debates still have to come, that things could change. And then the question is, okay, how does Mark Carney actually lead when he's prime minister? Because he's making a lot of promises right now. How is he going to pay for all that when, the deficit in Canada is already in the tens of billions of dollars? Like, that is an open question. And when he is talking, kind of signaling some austerity-ish kind of things as well. So how does that fit with all of this, supposed spending that he's suggesting he's going to do? The Conservatives, can they stay together? How are they going to try to, push back on this? On this Liberal government, if there's 4 years of a majority government, what do they do to rebuild then? Do they come apart once again? Then the smaller parties, it's like, how did the New Democrats reinvent themselves? Can the left actually kind of retake, some degree, like the leadership of that party and try to present a more kind of, explicitly left-wing, kind of more populist approach? Or is it decimated to such a degree that nobody really wants to take that on? The Bloc Québécois, whatever, they're going to keep, advocating for Quebec sovereignty and stuff like that. Whatever, they'll find someone to do that. It's not a big deal. The Greens have been led by this woman called Elizabeth May for like, I don't know, probably 20 years or something. Like, she is just been there forever. Even the brief couple of years where they got rid of her, she basically like stabbed the new leader in the back and came back again. So I think it's going to be good for them to be reduced to zero. She's looks like she's going to lose her seat finally. And then it's like they need to, have her, take a she needs to go away. Let's put it that way. If they have any chance, she needs to finally retire and, go live in Vancouver or Victoria Island somewhere and just enjoy her, senior years or
Is why you need a
whatever.
Bob Brown, man. Pick an island, chuck him out. No, I totally hear you. Like, I think it's fast. I just think it's fascinating, the structural stuff, right? Like, the differences between these different, like, relatively similar kind of orthodox Commonwealth countries, which have, comparative histories and different kind of political strands and philosophies and stuff. But the differences are so just like quite intense when it comes to these crisis points and crisis moments, like we were speaking about before. And like Kyle said, the difference about the Hipkins approach versus the Harris approach versus like the Carney just coming out of nowhere, like that couldn't happen in New Zealand. Both obviously for legal reasons, you can't have a non-MP just suddenly show up and be the prime minister,
It's called Christopher
but
Luxon, Philip.
oh, he's a fresh face, he's a fresh pair of hands. But it's just fascinating, I think. Like, even culturally, I don't think New Zealand would go for that.
Yeah, I think
Interesting.
the main things I'm like keeping an eye on, given the direction, as I've mentioned earlier, of Western centre left parties, is that the Liberals get in with a majority and then just start doing what Starmer's doing, right? So everything was a lie, and then you've got a real opportunity for smaller left wing parties to build organizational capacity to gain off the back of that. And at least you have those parties there. Unlike in the UK, where the Greens are kind of there, I guess. But now you've got this huge, like, billionaire-backed reform party running around doing fake left populism in some cases, just snapping up so many votes for what looks like is going to be outright fascism. So I think, like, at least having the administrative machinery behind those smaller left parties means that there's always an opportunity there, but it depends on what Carney's Liberal Party decides to do.
Yeah, and I think I would say this as well, which, is maybe kind of interesting. I feel like Canada's in this moment where it is really being forced to pivot because of, reasons that are outside of its control. And I kind of wonder what that is ultimately going to look like, how things are going to change. Like, I agree with your concern that Carney could be a Starmer, and I've kind of been saying that since he started running for the leader of the Liberal Party, because he says a lot of similar things, and he's friends with Starmer and with Rachel Reeves. So that is, yeah, and he's talked a lot about AI and implementing AI in government. Like, there's a lot of concerning shit there too, right? It's not all kind of positive, potential outcomes and all this kind of stuff. But I think as well, like, we're at an interesting moment where it's like, what does, I don't know, what do these global relationships, what do Western alliances, what do these trade agreements look like in the next, 12 to 24 months, given what is going on in the United States? And I think we might have talked about this the other day, Kyle, but one of the things that I think a lot of Canadians have learned over the past couple of years is that while we have a lot of allies, our allies aren't exactly close allies that will sacrifice for us when the moment comes to it, right? Whether that is when, Indian officials were, basically found to have killed Canadian citizens on Canadian soil, and Canada kind of looked around at its allies and they were like, yeah, that's kind of bad news, but India's like our kind of economic bulwark against China, so we don't want to really piss them off. So we're not really going to do anything about that. And then, of course, we learned they were trying to do similar things in the States, and in that case, India had to apologize because the US is big enough to kind of force them to. But and then, of course, more recently, with what Trump and the US have been doing, with regards to Canada, not just with the tariffs, but the threats of the 51st state and stuff. Some countries have said it's not so great. Other countries have not said much at all. The UK, which you would presume would be kind of one of our closest allies, given, historical reasons, and the fact that their king is still our head of state, wouldn't say anything at all because they want a trade deal with the United States. And so I guess for me, I wonder, like, what is this next period going to look like? Canada has been forced into kind of reckoning with the new America quicker than others because we're on the border and Trump has targeted us first. But now that Trump has done his Liberation Day with his broader tariffs, and we have yet to see what he's going to bring down the pike next. I wonder if there is really going to be an opportunity to start to imagine a different world order that doesn't have the United States at the center of it, because it often feels like, when we think about like Western countries and the Western alliance, it's like all of these countries that are just focused on like doing business with America, and not so much like everyone else that's supposedly like in this alliance. So I don't know, does it change? Do we have opportunities to shift things? Will Canada and New Zealand be working together more closely in the years to come? Who knows?
I think that's a pretty good place to end it, with
Sure.
a few questions for the audience
Okay.
to mull on
Yeah.
over the next few weeks. We're going to have a live stream of the Canadian election, all going to plan. It's April 28th in Canada. It'll be April 29th here, probably starting just after midday. So head over to YouTube and subscribe to us, and you'll get a little
Luckily, unlike the
alert.
Americans, our elections are usually decided pretty quickly, other than the fact that we have like a million time zones, so we just need to wait for the, results to start rolling out in the more Western provinces, right?
You've got a sneak peek of just how interesting it's going to be.
That's nice. That's
Yeah.
actually better. I prefer at least you have to wait for some results. The problem in New Zealand now is our results are too efficient. So they all come in
Right.
straight away and then things change by, tiny margins. And you go, well, we kind of knew that an hour and a half ago. So
Well,
are we still live streaming right now or?
sometimes the folks on the West Coast are like, the election's decided before the polls even close here. Like, it's not fair.
It's not fair.
Yeah, because so much of the population is in like Quebec and Ontario, right? And the
Yeah, stop
polls
the
close
count.
there. The count begins, and like the people in BC are still voting.
We need to stop the count movement for the West
Yeah.
Coast. I think.
Well,
Totally.
maybe we can kick that off on live stream in a few weeks. Thank you so much for joining us, Paris.
Absolutely. And I would also say I don't know when this is going live, but I'm
Next
doing a
couple of
live
days.
I'm doing an event in Auckland on Thursday, April 10th, I think that would be. Yeah, I'm sure you can like put information in the show notes, or I'll be, tweeting about it or blue skying about it or whatever we call it, if you want to find information about that. But yeah, if people want to come out, basically is what I'm saying.
And thank you, Philip, my co-host.
Cheers. Awesome. If you want to know more about Mark Carney, listen to James Shaw's first podcast episode that he had. It was awful. And Mark Carney was his guest.
Oh my
Was that
God.
like
I'm
7
gonna
years
have to go
ago?
listen to that
That's a long
now.
time ago. Go back and find it, Paris. You'll have a wild time.
Oh
Yeah.
gosh. No one listened to that. I'm not putting that link in the summary, but I will put a link to Paris's talk
I specifically
in
request
there.
not to put that link in the summary because it sucks and it's bad and no one should listen to it.
Fantastic. Hey, thank you so much for listening, everyone. Like, share, subscribe as per usual. And we'll catch you again on the weekend for current events. See you then.
If artifices are then I'm living a pointless life, but I'm learning all your lessons from your politics. There's no distinction, the road to par now is paved with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they criticize across the ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day. This vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road to hell.